Sometimes I wish I could boldly go where no man's gone before. But I'll probably stay in Aurora. What are you thinking about?
The Internet, the final frontier.
Hey there, you're listening to Boldly Going Nowhere. It's a podcast. You listen to it with your ears. On today's episode, I'll compare vinyl record shopping at two different stores here in Frederick. Colin and Sean will talk about Wayne's World 1 and 2. I'm Justin Eisenstadt.
I'm Colin Kakamas.
I'm Sean Holmes.
And you just got to the good part. Strap in and sit tight, because we are boldly going nowhere. Hey, you're listening to Boldly Going Nowhere. It's a show by professionals for professionals.
No, it's not.
If you guys only knew how many takes it took to actually get to this point right here. I'm not going to tell you.
Five.
Because I'm a prof...
You might be a professional, but we're all rank amateurs here.
Today, joined by a special guest, Amanda.
Hi, Amanda.
Hi, Colin.
Who may or may not decide to talk.
We'll
on the podcast.
She just did.
I guess she's decided.
Who's the amateur now? Oh, anyway.
I don't know. I'm just feeling very Garth-like today.
Yeah.
Gary.
Which is fitting because we're going to be talking about Wayne's World later in the show.
Later. What are we going to talk about right now?
No. Shh. First, my music segment. Always a favorite of me.
The AAS played in my living room in like 2001, so...
Yeah, that was a good time. Okay. So, y'all know that I like vinyl, and I had not bought any records in a long time, like months, but last week I was like, oh, I gotta get some more records.
It's ripped from vinyl.
Exactly. Exactly.
Vintage.
And,
Obs.
Okay. There's a quota, and you've reached it, so...
I'm sorry.
You don't get to play those sounds anymore.
I'll close the tab.
Is the tab closed? I can't see it.
Amanda, is the tab closed? I can't see it. The tab is closed. I was like, I don't really think you can stop him on that. He's the one who's got the computer.
He may be doing some other...
If he opens that tab, you smack his wrist.
He's got a new one now.
If it... Okay. So, there are two destinations for vinyl aficionados here in Frederick. One is the Record Exchange, formerly CD Game Exchange, which is over on Market Street. Mm-hmm. And the other is a newer place. It's called Rock and Roll Graveyard, and that's over on Patrick Street. So they're both pretty close to each other. And
yeah, I think the distance between them was like less than six blocks.
We'll say as the crow flies, probably not that far.
It's not that far.
What about the swallow?
Well, African or European?
European.
Oh, we're not getting into that.
Okay.
What just happened?
Nothing. Shh. Within the last couple of days, I've had the experience of shopping at both stores. So I thought we would just, and you guys have all shopped at both places, so I thought we would just compare and decide which is the better place to go for vinyl here in Frederick.
Consumer tips. Yep. It is the holiday season coming up.
Were you raising your, you don't need to raise your hand.
I know. Okay. I know which one's better already, but let's talk about some specifics.
Okay. So let's talk about the specifics. Let's start with Rock and Roll Graveyard since it's newer. So Rock and Roll Graveyard is a small, very small, independently owned record store, primarily specializing in used records. Mm-hmm. When you walk in there, you gotta walk down some stairs. It kind of has this little like basement vibe. Like you're like, it doesn't even feel like a store. You just kind of, you're walking into like some guy's basement.
Yeah, there was another store there that was there 2 years ago.
Yeah, I don't know what it was.
6 Feet Under Records.
So that was also another record store.
Yeah, it was another record store. It sold records, DVDs, comic books. And then it was weird because I can't. I was like, you know, I haven't been in that place for a long time. So I went back by there, and the sign had changed to Rock and Roll Graveyard. I was like, hey, what happened to 6 Feet Under? He's like, oh yeah, that guy lost his space like a year ago, dude. I'm like, oh
yeah,
shame. Yeah. At least there's another record store now.
So my first impressions of shopping in Rock and Roll Graveyard, it is really cramped in there. And space is a premium, and you will see all of it being used, mostly by records. But he sells, you know, there's some cassette tapes, some CDs.
8-tracks. Stuff you can get
some 8-tracks. But primarily records and primarily LPs. And I'd say the selection's pretty decent, but the organization, not quite as much. I mean, everything is pretty much organized alphabetically as you would expect for the main stacks. He's got sort of some bargain stacks where he's got some buy one, get one frees going on. To me, the biggest pro in favor of Rock and Roll Graveyard is that the prices tend to be cheaper on the used stuff. And when it gets to new stuff, for both stores, you're not going to see that much of a difference, but we'll get to that. So my first impression of Rock and Roll Graveyard, it's small. It's maybe it's cozy if that's your sort of thing, if you like that kind of feeling like, oh, yeah, I can really get in here and schmooze with the guy. But, you know, I have my opinions about the owner and proprietor of Rock and Roll Graveyard, but I'll get to that. I'll let everyone else share their impressions of Rock and Roll Graveyard.
Okay. I did go shop there a few times, and like you said, the majority of the stock there, the price is pretty low because the majority of it is used stuff. What new material I did see cycle through there, I think the only album I saw there that was like shrink wrap that I would actually want to buy was like I think it was a remastered version of Nirvana's Smells Like Teen Spirit, and that was like $90. I was like, why would I want? No, I'm not buying that for $90.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, $90. Yeah.
I'm surprised you guys haven't mentioned like the second thing that I noticed when I went in there, which is half of their stock came from the other store.
Oh, that
they buy most of what they have in there from the other store.
Yeah.
And how and why would you open your own store to carry what is 2 blocks away? That to me makes no sense. Makes me not want to go in there. That's just me.
And that is your opinion, and you are definitely entitled to it.
Yeah.
But to be honest, yeah, I actually do shop more at Record Exchange than I do at Rock and Roll Graveyard.
Yeah, well, that gets to Record Exchange, which, though, if we go back to what it was originally called, CD Game Exchange,
yay,
the name would imply they carry a lot more and a lot larger variety of products. Mm-hmm. So there's really just no comparison, I think, in terms of shopping experience. I was trying to come in here being more neutral about it, but the more I think about it, I'm just like, there's really, like, if unless like Record Exchange were to be mysteriously closed for some reason, or like was hit by a meteor.
I mean, let's be fair. There's nothing really, I mean, aside from the small space, there's really nothing wrong with Rock and Roll Graveyard. However, I mean, like well, Amanda said, with...
there's one thing wrong. And that's that the guy is not the most professional, okay? I'm just going to say that he has a schedule. The store has scheduled hours. Really does not pay attention to it at all. Because I follow him on Facebook, and I'll see statuses like, yeah, I decided to sleep in a little later today, so, you know, I'll be opening the store soon. Like, what's soon? Like, what if there were, like, people standing out? This is, like, RST video in Clerks. It's, like...
yeah.
I also just feel like that guy carries a lot of what he likes and what he would want to sell, and then, like, the stuff everybody wants, like your $90 Nirvana record versus, you know, the Record Exchange, which has a plethora of things, whether the person who owns the place wants it there or not. You know, he knows people are there to find things, and I always found that to be troublesome because you try to talk to the guy at the
Rock and Roll Graveyard.
Thank you. And I almost feel like I'm getting judged half the time about what I'm looking for. And it's uncomfortable.
I mean, it's not nearly as bad as the worst record store I've ever been to, which is in Baltimore. It's in Hamden. It's called True Vine.
Oh, is that the one where they judged you as soon as you walked in the door?
Well, okay, True Vine is this, like, you have to really search to find it. There's no obvious signage. It's in actually kind of almost a residential part of Hamden. And I go in there, and the guy that is playing the most inaccessible music he can possibly play. And this is coming from me. Like, this is coming from me.
Ultra hipster.
Right. This is coming from me. Like, I walked, it took me 5 minutes to find a single album by a band I'd heard of.
So basically, and
again, this is coming from me. Like,
so basically, you decided to visit the hipster Illuminati.
Well, I don't know what was going on there. I'm like, how do you stay in business when you are that hostile to every single person who walks in your door?
Because the majority of people who still buy still buy vinyl are masochists.
I mean, there's probably some merit to that idea that, like, oh, I earned this, you know, like.
I'm gonna go so much bullshit, it's gonna sound even better.
Yeah. I challenged this guy and I walked out superior because I hadn't lost my mind and decided to, you know, take a chainsaw to the place. Which crossed my mind.
Mm-hmm.
So there's another record store in Baltimore, which conversely is the best store I've ever been to.
The Soundgarden. Please tell me that's where you're going.
Yes.
Very good. Very good.
But close second to that one also in Catonsville. Tracks on Wax is a great store. It's not as big as Soundgarden, but the owner is the exact opposite of the guy at True Vine. He is the nicest guy. Like, has time for everyone, loves to schmooze, and it's better if you're looking for classic records, a lot of old stuff, which, in general, if you're looking for things on vinyl, you probably are anyways. They have a small rack of new stuff at Tracks on Wax, but it's a really nice environment. They have open mic nights there, and
Record Exchange does do live shows as well.
Yes, it does.
Yeah, actually, friends of the show, Adrian and the Marylanders, played there when they released their EP. That was nice.
Yeah, they're very friendly there as far as, you know, record releases and things like that, especially if you're local. They're very supportive of that, which is nice.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, where did you get my Peter Frampton album that I had?
That one I actually got at Rock and Roll Graveyard.
Huh. Okay.
I walked in one time. I had about $9 in my pocket. I walked out with, what was it? I walked out with a copy of Frampton Comes Alive for Sean, a copy of Journey's Escape for Brian, because Brian is pretty gay for Steve Perry.
Don't stop believing, Colin.
I know you won't stop believing, Brian.
Sing us a song.
Justin, what did I get for you?
Piano Man.
I don't remember.
I think I got you Billy Joel's Piano Man. Yeah,
and Police Sinker.
Right.
And I got the Police's Synchronicity.
That's how you pronounce it.
I have three Billy Joel albums on vinyl, and I think one of them did come from you.
Yeah, it was that, and then Synchronicity I gave you as well.
Yeah, even though I don't like the Police.
Yeah, I don't know.
I'm a Sting fan.
They're the most repetitive band I've ever heard.
Sending out an SOS.
5 minutes.
Sending out an SOS. Did you get that? I'm going to repeat it like 15 more times.
Yeah. I'm like,
sending out an SOS.
Sending out an 34. SOS. 34 times.
You actually counted how many times they say.
I play this song in Rock Band all the time.
It's the worst. He plays it on Rock Band.
The only song I can think of on Rock Band that is less fun to play than Message in a Bottle is Won't Get Fooled Again, because there's 4 minutes of just like not doing anything when there's a keyboard solo.
Well, you know, that's why you play keyboard.
No, I haven't. So,
well, that's why you play the keyboards whenever you play Rock Band.
Yeah, I know, but when that song came out, they didn't have the keyboard. So,
well, damn it, travel in the future and then get them.
Okay.
Like, didn't you write a paper on like vinyl as a an art form?
I close. I wrote it on the subculture of vinyl collectors. It was like 30 pages, and I did it at Tracks on Wax because they have a very nice like listening area with the comfy chairs set up, and you just like kind of sit down and bring my tape recorder, sit there for a few hours, wait for people to come in, and just like talk to people about vinyl. But specifically, like people our age, our generation.
Right.
Because I wasn't really concerned about older people. Like, it's obvious why they're collecting vinyl because they actually grew up with it. But we didn't so much. But I'm thinking now, and I'm thinking about all the stores we talked about, all four stores, Soundgarden, Tracks on Wax, Record Exchange, Rock and Roll Graveyard, or Five Stars, actually, and True Vine. And I'm realizing...
We didn't talk about Under the Sun. Also in Frederick.
Oh, go ahead.
There's not a whole lot to say. That guy doesn't like to show up either.
Okay.
And he the guy that's usually in there doesn't know anything about anything, so there's not a lot to say about that place, though. You know, I've tried to support them because I think they're doing a really good thing over there. It's just tough when they're not helping me.
Yeah.
You know, and that's how I feel with these littler record stores. Just like, you know, even on Record Store Day this year, you know, I was trying to go to Under the Sun, but nobody could answer a question for me. No one could tell me if they were even participating. And turns out, in the end, they were not. And you would think, you know, these smaller record companies that have the Record Exchange to, you know, so that are their competition, they would try harder to get people to go to theirs, but it's almost like they've given up. They know what's superior, and they know what's going to win, but at the same time, it's, even though they're all small record stores, I still want to support the small record store, and I feel like the only place that makes that easy is the Record Exchange, you know? You know, which I waited 2 hours outside of, like, you know, a 15-year-old kid waiting for concert tickets outside of Macy's. But, you know, it's okay because I got what I wanted.
We waited for, like, an hour today just so we could go in there. I mean, that was just because we got there before it opened. But I'm realizing, like, it's interesting to me. You would think if you're really looking for a great vinyl shopping experience, you'd want to go to a store that's, like, for a purist, you know, that specializes in vinyl, as opposed to going to a place like Record Exchange or Soundgarden, where it's just a lot of stuff and they just happen to have a lot of vinyl. But in fact, in both cases, it's exactly the opposite. Soundgarden and Record Exchange are great shopping experiences. You get friendly, knowledgeable staff. And the fact that they sell video games and movies and all this other stuff does not VHS. Take away. VHS tapes, Laserdisc. We found Laserdiscs.
Yeah.
Laser at Record Exchange today.
Oh, man. They got a pretty decent section of like Laserdiscs. I was amazed. But here's the thing, and going back to what you said, is that what's the name of the place in Baltimore?
Which one?
Soundgarden?
Yeah, Soundgarden.
That's it? Okay.
It's in Soundgarden.
Maybe Soundgarden. I've never been there, but Record Exchange, definitely. Record Exchange, even though they sell multiple medias, like DVD and VHS and CDs and everything, it still seems like they're still trying to cater specifically to the vinyl culture.
Right, which obviously as they changed their name to reflect that.
It was originally with CD Game Exchange, and then they switched it to Record Exchange because the bulk of their stock is specifically vinyl records.
Yeah. And that's what's interesting to me. You go to a store where, with the exception of Tracks on Wax, which literally only sells LPs, 33 and a third, long playing records, they do not sell anything else, not even like other forms of vinyl. And that guy's great. But that being the one exception, the other two stores where it seems like it's more, you'd expect more expert help and knowledgeable help, and you don't get it. So in both those cases, it just seems like a guy trying to pawn off his record collection at a yard sale.
It does sort of feel like that. And if you don't want what he has, you don't know what you want. Kind of.
And I have a problem with that too, because there's so many bands that I like. Unless I come in with a list, which I never do, I'm like, what am I going to look for today? I was so excited about the whole getting to the record store part. Now that I'm here, I'm like, there's like 50,000 records here. How am I going to find something that I actually want to buy?
Yeah, I mean, at least the organization system at Record Exchange is a lot better than it is at Rock and Roll Graveyard. And because, I mean, you know, they have sections specifically, like, here is the new stock we've just gotten. Here is, you know, everything else, and that's all alphabetized. So that way you know what's brand new, so, you know, if you can't find it in the other stack, you go to the new release stack.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you, Amanda, when you shop for vinyl records, are you more looking for old stuff, like old classic stuff that you can't get on CD or download, or are you, or do you tend to more shop for new stuff or reissues, like brand new vinyl?
It really varies. A lot of times I try to find older stuff, but I mean, there is always those albums that are re-released or done in a color or whatever, some special thing that you're trying to look for, where, you know, the Record Exchange and or, you know, Soundgarden will fulfill that for you. But when it comes down to finding like that thing, like you said, I don't go in there with a list. I go in there and I will start at one end, dig through it all the way to the other end.
And
that's how it goes, whether I'm looking for CDs, whether I'm looking for vinyl, or whatever I might be looking for.
Yeah,
and,
until your, you know, significant other or whatever starts being like,
yeah,
you, we've been here for 2 hours and you're only to like E. Like, I'm sorry, this is how it works.
Well, you know, the Record Exchange was tough for me because I worked right next door to it, and I had to make a rule that I could only go in there, like, Monday.
Yeah.
Because I'd go in there, you know, every day of the week, and I'd be there digging through every single thing, because I never have a list. I never have a list right. for anything I'm looking for unless I know it's a special reissue. But, you know, in order to be fair with this, you know, there are some downsides to, you know, the Record Exchange. One of my biggest problems is that they're trying to be known for vinyl now, and the vinyl that they're putting at the forefront for everybody, like, look what we have now. It's like, you know, what's on the radio today that nobody really needs to buy on vinyl, you know?
Right,
like,
it's kind of
love Blink-182, their new album, I don't need it on vinyl.
Yeah,
here's nobody needs it on vinyl.
If the album wasn't recorded in an analog format, there's really no
reason for the vinyl.
But to be fair, that's not Record Exchange really pushing that. That's the recording industry trying to pawn that off.
Because they're realizing that reissued vinyl now is like this really profitable niche market that's, you know, it's trendy and hip. And, you know,
people
want
to buy shit in a dead format? Holy shit, we need to cash in on this.
Like you're saying, like, I'm not going to spend $90 on Nirvana's Nevermind. I'm like, yeah, it's a classic album, but
one
that's
click
the point.
Download.
That's the point. Everyone has that album. I don't need a new version of it.
It's not the, you know, the reissues I have a problem with. You know, to each their own. It's the, like, regular Tuesday release that they're putting on the spindle in the front of the store, like, to attract people. I'm like, I didn't think that was what the point of this store was, and I don't know if you guys know this or not, but this store actually moved, and I wish I could tell you, I used to know which state it came from and even what city in that state it came from, because they actually moved here, the original owner and everything, and just sort of reopened here. And, you know, the original sort of setup of the game and, what was it, CD and game exchange or whatever, is what it was, wherever it came from. And then they sort of, like, molded into what this area wanted more of. And I guess
you're
that's
talking
okay.
about Record and Tape Trader. Right?
No.
Okay. Yeah. I kind of miss Record and Tape Trader.
Yeah, I don't miss Record and Tape Traders at all, because their prices are ridiculous. Compared, and this is me.
This is me being snobby,
and I compare everything to the Soundgarden because it's like my favorite place in the world. And no matter where I go in Baltimore, even if I'm 40 miles away, I have to make sure I go to the Soundgarden.
Well, Soundgarden is
and
famous.
Before I get, yes,
like it's known all around the country, not just like in Maryland. It's,
absolutely,
it's one of the most famous music stores.
And I'm just so happy it's near me.
I know, right?
Because that's where I spend all my money. Yet I spend nothing. I go in there with $50, and I'm leaving with, you know, 15 CDs or, you know, 4 vinyls or whatever I end up leaving with that day.
And you walk around the corner, get some brick oven pizza and some gelato.
And the thing is, you feel like you bought something.
And they have a parking lot. So
yes.
I don't know about Soundgarden, but, like, for instance, I mean, the placement of Record Exchange is, like, right in the heart of downtown. It's right down the main Dragon Market Street.
Yeah.
And, I mean, we were walking around there. We found, like, 8 or 9 shops. Just, I mean, we had to go kill time because, like Justin said, we were there an hour before they opened, and we found more than enough to do to keep us occupied until then. And then, you know, after we were done poking around in there, we had, like, this kick-ass lunch over at Brewer's Alley.
Well, the irony of that is that they're actually open more conveniently than anything else. So for that, you have to be waiting on them is actually kind of funny.
Yeah.
You're usually the place you go to wait on everybody else.
Well, mind you, it we did happen to go to a record store on a Sunday,
that's
so they
true,
just
yes.
they open late.
The fact that that it's a store in Frederick and it's open on Sunday, that enough isn't it makes me happy because
They're like, the reason why we went to 8 or 9 shops was because 6 of them were closed,
right?
You know, we were just like, oh, okay, they're closed, let's go on to the next one.
Yeah, like cough making music.
Well, I mean, that's what business would they be getting on a Sunday, really?
My business.
Me?
Okay, yeah, our business, but I
except
mean,
that I picked Mondays
because Sunday
day
is the
there.
One day that I have to like go
right.
do this stuff.
What about Monday?
Yeah.
That's when I'm there.
Nah, okay. So, might be bumping over. So you would say in Frederick, the place to go for vinyl records would be Record Exchange.
I'm gonna have to go with Record Exchange.
I'm definitely going Record Exchange, though it pains me that the other two don't try harder, because I really think that they could be better.
Well, I
don't have a record player. I have record. I have.
We need
a record.
To get one for Sean. We need to get an official record player for Castwave Studios.
I will start.
But
I don't know.
You know
what happened there. But anyway,
it's not cool to try though.
I know, yeah. It's not trendy, but at the same time, like I said before,
I'm not really trying anyway. I mean,
do or do not. There is no try.
I'm in the digital age right now. Just it's too easy.
Yeah, you're like the Dean Martin of not trying. Yeah.
No, he's got
his iPods filled with music, dude.
Yeah,
he's got all those musics up in his iPod.
You know what though? The digital age is so much more convenient, and I'm with you on that, because I not only buy vinyl, but I also buy the CDs. But the vinyl that I do buy is something I know I want to keep forever on vinyl.
Right.
I don't just go out and buy vinyl to have it because I can say I have it. It has a purpose. It's something I know I need to have forever. Mm-hmm. Versus that album that has one song that, I'm just going to buy the CD because I want the rest of it or whatever.
It's more the vinyl is an experience. It's experience and it's plus the artwork. It's
right.
Just,
well, now we're
a part of it.
Yeah, now we're getting into the topic of why are people attracted to vinyl, and I wrote a 30-page paper on that, so I don't...
It's
like,
hip.
Yeah.
You should post that on the blog.
You should...
I wish I could publish it in a journal,
I wrote a paper similar to that.
Put it on the blog.
Put it on the blog, seriously.
I'm not going to put a 30-page paper on the blog.
Yeah.
Then just release it in sections.
Part one.
Maybe. Part two. Oh, I could do that. All right.
People would read it.
But speaking of music.
Let's wrap up the music section for today. It's been fun talking about vinyl and stores.
But you can go to
castwavestudios.com/support.
And you can look up music in the Boldly Going Shopping section.
Yeah.
So I encourage any of the listeners to do that.
We're such whores.
Eh. Hey, we got to do something.
Yeah. So Amanda, you decide on an album or albums that you want to review, and then the next time you come on the show, I'll have listened to them by then, and we can both review them.
I'll give you some today, and I'll be ready to go for next time.
All right. Sweet. Well, let's take just a little break, and we'll come back. And go to movies.
Sweet. Nice. Sean.
You can hear Boldly Going Nowhere on Stitcher Smart Radio. Stitcher allows you to listen to your favorite shows directly from your iPhone, Android phone, BlackBerry, or Palm phones. On demand and on the go. Don't have Stitcher? Download it free today at Stitcher.com or in the app stores. Stitcher Smart Radio. The smarter way to listen to radio.
And we're back.
Thanks, Sean.
No problem. Yeah, it's kind of weird going from me to me. We need to get some other people to.
I did a Stitcher one.
You did? I don't have it on here, but anyway, so it's BGN at the movies.
Oh, Herb Alpert. Well, so originally this weekend we were slated to review Skyfall, the latest in the James Bond series.
Right.
Unfortunately, we didn't get around to going to the movie theater, so Sean and I were trying to make a decision as to what we could review. And I was really trying to think of what movie could we review that we'd get a laugh out of. And so we decided to go with a perennial classic from the SNL catalog.
Right.
We went with, we went with the Mike Myers, Dana Carvey film, Wayne's World. And
yeah.
I'm trying to remember what year that was released. It was either 91 or 92.
I think 92.
Yeah. So, obviously, based on the Saturday Night Live sketch of the exact same name, this movie reviews the, goes through the exploits of, Dana Carvey, who's playing Garth Algar, and Wayne Campbell, played by Mike Myers. And, let's put it this way. When you're trying to create a 90-minute film out of a sketch that never really exceeds more than 4 minutes...
Yeah.
You would think that there's a little too much of a stretch, not enough to make it,
A full movie.
Yeah, full movie. However, the Wayne's World actually defies that expectation. At least the first one. The second one falls into the trap there. Right. But we did watch both via Amazon Instant Video, which was nice.
Yeah.
So Wayne's World, very popular in the sense that it introduced our culture to Queen due to the opening sequence where they're riding around in that beat-up
awesome
gremlin.
Opening sequence.
Yeah, I mean, for a movie based on an SNL sketch to have so many lines and scenes, which are now like iconic parts of pop culture, that's pretty damn impressive.
Mm-hmm.
And you're saying like it's such a challenge to stretch out a 4 or 5 minute sketch in a 90 minute movie. Wayne's World is the opposite. It leaves you wanting more. Like you just like the movie ends, you're like, I want to see more of this because like you enjoy every minute of it.
Yeah, and to be perfectly honest, I did enjoy Wayne's World 2, but in certain parts that started to drag on. You could see the strings starting to fray apart, which understandable. But Wayne's World. Now, funniest thing about Wayne's World is it had been a while since I'd watched this. It had actually been about 4 or 5 years since I'd seen Wayne's World. And I was like, we need to do a drinking game with Wayne's World.
I like as soon as I saw that text message, I was like, I haven't seen that movie in a while. Let's do this.
Yes.
Yeah.
So the drinking game for Wayne's World is actually quite simple. You are to take a drink every time Wayne breaks the fourth wall.
Right.
Wayne specifically.
Only
because
Wayne.
There are at least 2 or 3 characters otherwise that continue to break the fourth wall throughout that film. I was like, well, it's really funniest when Wayne does it. Yeah. So we were like, okay, when Wayne breaks the fourth wall, you take a drink. Every time Garth does science, you take a drink. And by Garth doing science, I mean anything with robotics, anything with electronics.
Yeah.
If it's got dials, switches, toggles, anything like that. If he's got it, he's handling it. Oh, it's science.
Yeah.
So when Garth does science, when Terry, their cameraman, makes things really uncomfortable by saying, I love you, man! You took a drink then, and I think there was one more rule. Does anybody remember what it was?
Wayne's ex-girlfriend.
When Wayne's ex-girlfriend Stacy shows up, played by Lara Flynn Boyle.
Yeah.
Of Twin Peaks fame.
Yeah, go figure.
I mean, yeah, she wasn't really doing anything at that point.
Well, the point is,
you get fucked up pretty quick in that game.
We're really good at coming up with drinking games for movies.
Well, and that actually brings me to something I wanted to talk about. We're actually going to MAGFest in about what, a week, about a month and a week from now?
Yeah, pretty soon. Actually, by the time this episode, yeah.
About a month and a week.
Month and 2 weeks.
It'll be probably around there.
Who's counting? I am because I'm excited.
Yes, I am excited. But the beauty of it is that one of the things we're going to be doing at MAGFest is we're going to be having some rousing games of drinking game commentary.
Yes.
What is drinking game commentary, you ask? Well, I'm glad you asked. I'm going to tell you. Drinking game commentary is basically a member of the studio. More than likely, it'll be Brian Massey of One Drunk Geek fame.
Yes.
Hi. Brian Massey is going to be playing either a member of our studio audience, or if we have an interviewee handy at the time, he'll be playing the interviewee at the drinking game, which, to give you a for instance, say we were going to watch Wayne's World. They'd be basically playing the same rules. They'd be watching the film, and every time one of these rules was enacted, you have to take a drink. And so at the same time, Justin, Sean, and myself will be watching the film, and obviously we'll be drinking because, hey, who wants to be left out?
Not us.
Exactly.
Not us, yeah.
But, I mean, we can drink whenever the fuck we want. We don't have to wait on...
So we can drink, but we're going at our own pace.
Yeah, we're judges, so for us, standard cup-to-mouth rule.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And so the idea is that while they're playing the drinking game and descending into booze madness...
Right.
The three of us just get to make snarky comments while drunk about the movie.
Yeah.
Or
hence, both drinking game and commentary.
Exactly.
Yes.
And that's one of the things we're actually going to get around to at MAGFest. There's a couple more, and we'll let you in on those as we get closer and closer to the event. Now, Wayne's World is the first movie we're watching. Now, the second film was Wayne's World 2. And as I said before, there was a lot more issues with Wayne's World 2 than Wayne's World 1.
What was he got his M&Ms and then we started the show?
Yeah, well, all right, actually, before we move on, I did remember there was one more drinking game rule. Every time Wayne spoke Cantonese.
Oh, yeah.
You had to take a drink. Yeah. Well, and that's the problem. In the second film, we're introduced to Cassandra's father, and there's a lot more of the Cantonese going on, and then the bad dubbing, like in most Kung Fu movies. And James Hong, who plays Cassandra's father, there's a hilarious faux Kung Fu fight between him and Mike Myers. That, I have to admit, that was one of the funnier moments of the film for me. But the overall plot in the first Wayne's World film made sense. The second one just really doesn't. I mean, basically Wayne Campbell is visited by the ghost of Jim Morrison and a weird naked Indian, and he's basically told you have to put on a concert in Aurora and you have to get all these bands, and Wayne's like, well, how the hell am I supposed to get them? I'm just a small-time, you know, cable access host. He's like, if you book them, they will come. Where's Kevin Costner when I need him? I mean, like, it was basically a blatant pander to people who had just seen Field of Dreams, which I believe had been released the year before. And that was a shit-ass movie then, and I don't think Wayne's World could have made it any better.
Yeah, it's a little disappointing when you're using a Kevin Costner movie as the inspiration for your sequel.
But at least, be fair, it wasn't The Postman. But let's talk about the good things of Wayne's World 2. Like I said, the kung fu fight between Mike Myers and James Hong was pretty good. Christopher Walken, always hilarious in any film he's in. In fact, one of the drinking game rules for the second film was anytime Christopher Walken is just being awkward, you take a drink.
Yeah.
I think we need to change that to outwardly awkward, or a certain moment of silence comes after what he actually said. Because,
well, to be honest, yeah, there was because
you know,
one
you, people one could argue like, oh, Christopher Walken's awkward in every scene, well, and you know, and
in this film, really, there's
he's not really quite as Walken-y in this movie.
Well, and that's the thing.
When Walken's being Walken-y, how about that?
Yeah.
That's a good one.
It's, yeah, well, basically, we'll that. Yeah, that's the issue. The issue is there's really only one scene that is, like, truly awkward in this movie that Christopher Walken is responsible for. And that's when Garth tries to pull the old, you know, a sphincter says what joke. Yeah. And, oh, by the way, that was actually another one of the rules in the drinking game. Every time the word sphincter is said.
Yes, an effective drinking game is one where you forget most of the rules because there are so many.
Yes, but that scene, you know, basically where, you know, Garth is like, Bobby, a sphincter says what? I say again, a sphincter says what? You want me to say what? Like I don't get it. Oh dear, last guy didn't get it. Yes, you big, we small. I'm like...
Like, I don't get it.
He's like I don't know if Walken was, like, legitimately pissed off, because I don't know if he was acting in that scene or not. Because he literally looked like, is that it? You don't think I get it? I'm like, Chris, calm down. It's a movie. But overall, I would say if you're going to rent one or the other, you got to rent Wayne's World, because Wayne's World 2 is just goofy after the first viewing.
I see a little silhouette of a man.
Yeah.
Scaramouche, will you do the Fandango?
Yeah, you can... Wayne's World 2, you can take it or leave it.
Yeah, Wayne's World 2 is a pretty mediocre sequel.
Yeah.
Basically, they replay the exact same ending from the first film, in that, you know, they do two bullshit endings, and then they do the happy ending. Yeah.
Yeah, that was very cheap that they...
Yeah, that was just basically
recycled
just
that joke.
Yeah, they were just cock slapping us in the face at that point.
I'm now reminded of my little brother Adam, who for a long period of time was convinced that there was a Wayne's World 3, despite no evidence to that point. But Adam gets very argumentative about things that are obviously wrong. Like, for example, insisting that Jason Bateman and Charlie Sheen look alike. Which they don't.
No.
At all. Hey, in the slightest.
Hey, hey, Elvis is alive. He's alive. He's skinny, too.
So there, these are just one of many bizarre arguments that my little brother likes to make.
It, yeah, he definitely...
In fact, the more absurd it is, the stronger he argues in favor of it.
I'm trying to think of something absurd.
Emilio Estevez was a better actor than Charlie Sheen. Well, okay, actually, that one is true, but...
He doesn't share the same fake name as you.
Yeah.
Oh, Sheen.
All right.
Well, anyway, I was banging like... 7 gram rocks. You know, that's how I roll.
That's how I roll.
Winning.
Winning.
All right, we busted out Charlie Sheen lines. It's time to end the show.
Ah. Oh, so soon. So yeah, soon.
I mean, like, forever.
But plugs.
Oh, but plugs, right.
Like God that.
Damn it.
So... We have a website. It's called www.castwavestudios.com. Mm. And it's our source and your source for all things podcast, video, music, blogging, and...
Brug.
So essentially, it's, you know, it's something
the
like...
The internet. The final frontier.
It is the final frontier.
But we have charted it successfully for you and put it all on one awesome website called CastwayStudios.com.
And how much does this cost? It doesn't cost that much. How much does it cost?
I did that for free.
Oh, it's for free. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, we did, but only because you haven't donated to it.
Yeah. So you go to CastwayStudios.com/support, and you'll find... a donate button if you just straight out want to give money to us. If you're like, eh, I want to get something in return, we have our Castwave Studios QR shirt. And if you want to be in the know of the tech savvy elite, you want to perplex random t-shirt readers, well, now you can. It's a fabulous piece of fashion that comes with our QR code that can be read by a smartphone app. So people can click it and it goes straight to CastwaveStudios.com.
Having trouble with words there?
Oh, I fell down the stairs.
A lot of those words just didn't.
Words
make it.
Are hard.
They just didn't.
Quit. Words that, are that, hard. That. Yeah. So anyway, and there's also the Boldly Going Shopping, which is awesome.
Yes, you can shop through Amazon.
Looking through music and looking at the classic rock, part of the.
You can buy some vinyl.
MP3s. Yep. And you can download whatever Justin recommends on his segments.
Yeah.
That's nice.
Also, Twitter's.
Twitters and new emails.
Yes.
So Twitters first.
So I'll go ahead and go through the Twitters here. Now, aside from the Castwave Studios official account, which is at BGN Podcasts, we all actually also have our own personal Twitter accounts.
Who'd have thunk it?
Justin's, I believe, is JEisen88. I'm sorry, at JEisen88.
You believe correctly.
Sean's is at Sean L. Holmes.
That is correct, sir.
And mine, that's me, Colin. Mine is at Colin20-something. That's SOMETHIN. And if you want to see, you know, funny quotes from us that are 140 characters or less, read them sometime. Yeah.
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 All right.
Also, we have Facebook. Facebook.com/BGM Podcast.
Yeah. And go to facebook.com/castwavestudios and give us the like button as well as, you know, the facebook.com/BGM podcast, like you said before. Also, good news, we have a brand new official email, castwavestudios.com email. It's bgn@castwavestudios.com. So you can email whatever you want to email. Email away.
Aw, snap.
Questions, comments, whatever.
We're on the forward wave of a digital revolution and connectivity, something synergy, something content.
Also in later episodes, prepare to be stumped. That's all I gotta say about that.
Oh God,
prepare to be stumped.
Content.
Da-da-da. Yes, it starts.
Next episode,
yeah.
I'm gonna talk about how fucking tired I am of the word content. I seriously hate that word.
Content.
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 You know what you should call it? Content. Yeah, that's what you
should. No. Until next time, I'm Justin Eisenstadt.
I'm Colin Kakamas.
And I'm Sean Holmes.
And we are boldly going nowhere.
Gersperms is my favorite, Brooks.
Boldly Going Nowhere is a Castwave Studios production. For other shows and more, visit castwavestudios.com. Wow, that sounded great.
Sometimes I wish I could boldly go where no man's gone before. But I'll probably stay in Aurora. What are you thinking about?
Cassandra. She's a fox. In France, she would be called La Renard, and she would be hunted with only her queen to protect her.
She's a babe.
She's a robo-babe. In Latin, she would be called Babia Majora.
If she were a president, she'd be Abraham Lincoln. Did you ever find Bugs Bunny attractive when he'd put on a dress and play a girl bunny?
No.
Can you just remember?
No.
Neither did I.
That should be an outtake. That should go at the end.
Sean, start
the
over.
The Internet. The Final Frontier.
Stop that.
Start over.